All right, hello, hello. I'm seeing some attendees trickle in. I see Dana. Dana, thanks for being here. I really appreciate you. I know Dana from Digital Marketer, so it's kind of cool to see our worlds begin to cross. Oh, I just saw Liz join. Liz, thanks for being here. Robin, I'm going to let some more folks trickle in before I fire it off, but remember that this is recorded too, so we'll always be able to revisit. Lynn, thanks for joining, Lynn. Rachel. All right, we're getting kind of a little bit of a crowd here. That's not a bad shake. For those of you that don't know, my name is Kasim. I'm a traffic coach over at Digital Marketer. I also run a Google Ads agency called Solutions 8. And I'm going to teach you how to run Facebook ads today. But what's cool is I'm going to teach you how to run Google Ads today. I'm doing another talk on Facebook ads. So today's Google. But I'm going to teach you how to run Google Ads specifically for Simplera. Because there's, you know, some mild nuances when it comes to conversion tracking, set up the campaigns, et cetera. We've got a small group. We've got a real intimate environment. And I like questions. So don't be afraid to, you know, lob something in the chat or in the Q&A portal, whatever is most applicable to you. I think what might be easier for everybody is if you have a question for me, throw it in a Q&A. If you have a comment for the group, throw it in a chat. Make sure that you are chatting with everyone because there's the ability to chat privately. Looks like we have some new joinees, Liz, Heather, Nicholas. Thank you all for being here. So I'm going to dive into it. Are we cool with that? Can everybody hear me? Am I coming through? Can you see me? Do we feel good technologically? Everybody's saying yes. Awesome. Loud and clear. Tool. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and make sure that I'm sharing the right one. I'm going to share this one. And I want to maybe offer just a brief intro. I created a dummy site. So I can show you how to market a Simplera website specifically. And so I built this inside of the membership site, but it can be, you know, segue this to any Simplera site. And there's basically two conversion actions on my dummy site. So let's assume for a moment that this particular client sells courses, but also sells consultations. So there's something that somebody can buy right then and there, which is something you'd want to build a Google Ads campaign for. Or there's the ability to generate a lead. So somebody who's interested in talking to you. And this is a really good note to start off with, which is when you're going to run a traffic campaign, you have to know what your goal is. Starting out, you have to know exactly what your goal is. And that seems kind of redundant and routine, but you'd be surprised at how many clients try to hire us and they have no idea really what they want people to do. So get very clear on what it is that you want folks to do. And that's what you're going to be building your ad campaign around. And the way to do that, by the way, is to go to your website and see what it is you ask them to do. If you're asking them to schedule an appointment, that's one of your goals. If you want them to fill out a contact us form or sign up for your membership or purchase a course or you know, do any of the things that you have outlined, every single one of those is what we call a conversion action. And every single one of those is something that we can optimize our campaign to do. So get really clear on what it is that you want people to do. So I've got my test site here and I want people to fill out this little form. And then I've got my test product here and I want people to buy my product. And what I'm going to try to do is teach you how to build campaigns for both of these. Because I think, you know, looking at Simplera, I felt like these were maybe the two most important conversion actions. And so I wanted to give you as much value as I possibly can. And I'm going to teach you how to build campaigns to generate leads. So people, you know, scheduling consultations or filling out forms or, you know, subscribing. And also to generate purchases, actual conversions. And it's a lot to go through in a little bit of time. So I think one of the things that I want to maybe just offer as a disclaimer real quick is this is called a masterclass. And I'm going to make sure that I live into that promise. This is not your beginner Google Ads 101 for dummies. You can YouTube that. That's available everywhere. That content is available everywhere. You signed up for this because you wanted something that was higher level. So know that we're going to dive really deep and I'm going to go really fast because I talk fast and I have a lot of information to give you. This is recorded. And it's always something that you're going to be able to revisit. And you can ask me questions as we're going, but don't allow yourself to get overwhelmed. As a matter of fact, I'd encourage you not to, you know, try to follow along and do the thing right here in the moment. Instead, maybe just, you know, walk through, learn the process with me, and then realize that you can go back and do it after the fact. That said, let's dive into really doing real work. So we're going to build out Google Ads campaigns for my test dummy site. And by the way, I'm a data nerd. I'm not a you know, content writer or creative or any of those things. And you're going to see that really quickly. So my test site is a dummy site. let's dive into it. So step number one is you need a Google Ads campaign. If you don't have a Google Ads campaign, you can go to ads.google.com and sign up for one. Google's going to want you to have a Gmail account. You don't necessarily have to approach it that way, but it ends up being a little bit easier for you if you have a Google account because you now get to have one login for the entire Google ecosystem. So sign up for a Google Ads campaign, how it is that you do that. And then when you encounter this screen, you're going to say new Google Ads account. And you know, a disclaimer that I'm going to offer everybody is we break all the rules all the time. So Google keeps trying to funnel you into doing certain things. And none of these are not, I can't say none of them, but many of them are not to your advantage and they're not in your best interest. So you have to be really comfortable being a rule breaker because I know what rules to break and what rules not to break. And I'm going to teach you that right here and now. The very first rule that we're going to break is on the very first screen of Google. So here's Google saying, what's your main advertising goal? And it wants you to choose a goal. We're not going to do that. And we're not going to do that because if we choose a goal, it's going to restrict everything that's available to us in terms of the features and functionality inside of Google. And some of that stuff is stuff that we really want and need. So instead, you're going to scroll all the way down here where it says, are you a professional marketer? Switch to expert mode. And we're going to select that and we're going to switch to expert mode. So now you and I are in expert mode together, which means we're experts. I'm proud of you. From here, Google now wants you to select a goal. And that's fine, except we're not ready to build a campaign. And this kind of pisses me off a little bit about the way that both Google and Facebook function. I understand why they start this way. It's because this is what people are excited to do. But this is a flawed model. You don't want to begin building a campaign to drive traffic until you know what goal you're working to accomplish. It's to your disadvantage. So what we're going to do is we're going to click on this little link that says create an account without a campaign. And once you create an account without a campaign, it may ask you to enter your credit card information, incidentally. If it does, then you know obviously you're going to want to do that, but it doesn't here, so I'm going to click submit. And now we've got an account, and it says congrats, and so I'm going to explore my account. Real quick note about navigation inside of Google Ads. This little slider here is your core navigation. If you ever get lost, just open this up and head over to All Campaigns, and it's going to bring you to your All Campaigns overview. This secondary navigation, the secondary vertical navigation is going to reflect whatever main navigation you have selected. So I've only got All Campaigns, but as I begin building campaigns, they'll start listing here on the left-hand side. And if I click one, then it will open up the navigation applicable specifically to that campaign. It gets a little confusing. And it's honestly, I applaud Google for the way they've structured this because it's brilliant. And they've put a ton of tools and communication inside of a pretty tight environment. So just know that that exists. The very first thing we're going to do before we build your Google campaign is we're going to create conversion actions. And we're going to create conversion actions because we want to know what it is that we're optimizing for. And I'm going to show you exactly how to do that right now. I'm pulling up my notes here just to make sure that I don't skip steps. And that's one of the disadvantages that you're going to have to deal with me is, you know, when you get really good at something, you start to do it shorthand. But when you teach people, you want to make sure that you're teaching them the entire right way. And so I've done my best at reminding myself not to skip certain things. But if you catch me, feel free to just say, hey, why do you, you know, skip that button or whatever. So now we've got our campaign open and we're going to go up into tools and settings. And then under measurement, you're going to see conversions. And let's select conversions. And now you're not going to have any conversions outlined. And so the very first thing you want to do is add a conversion. And Google's going to say, what kind of conversion would you like to track? And immediately we need to pause. Chances are you don't want to track app conversions or app installs. Importing conversions is for like offline data or Google Analytics. So the two that may be applicable to you are website conversions and phone calls. Now, phone call conversions are applicable, especially for my coaches out there that are accepting phone calls. You want to track all the phone calls you're getting because they can be more than half of the leads that you receive. So a catastrophic error in the realm of Google Ads is driving traffic to a page that has a phone number that's prominent and then not tracking those calls. Because not only are you not being able to see what it is that Google's producing, but Google's not able to see what they're producing. And which means that if they're successful in certain instances, Google's really good at delivering more success. It's good at identifying common denominators and replicating those. And so you want to track every single conversion action you offer on a site, lead magnet downloads, live chat, phone calls, any form, anything that you let people do, you want to track inside of Google Ads, because even if it's not monetizable for you, it can be a predictive indicator of interest. Google can say like, hey, 10 people came to the website. You know, these people didn't buy, but they did more things than these people did. So let me go find more of them because they're more likely to buy later. So I'm not going to go over phone calls today. It's actually pretty easy to set up. I've got a YouTube tutorial on it. If you want to hunt me down on YouTube, I'll share that channel with you at the end of this. But right now we're going to go over our website conversions because these are the, I think, a little bit more difficult to set up. So I'm going to select website, and now it's going to ask me to create my conversion action. The first thing it's going to do is to, ask me to choose my category. Now this is new. Well, it's not new. The selection, the categories are new. Google did something brilliant, really interesting, is they're asking you to choose the conversion category here, but they're not asking simply so they can categorize your conversions. They're actually using machine learning in order to drive the type of conversion that you want. So if you say, hey, I really want people who subscribe, Google's like, well, I know who my clicky people are that like to subscribe to things. So realize that you put yourself at a massive disadvantage. If Google ever asks you for information and you don't give it the information it's asking for, then you're going to put yourself in a situation where you're not benefiting from the trillion-dollar AI engine that wants to use machine learning to your advantage. So I'm going to say we're going to choose our category. And remember what it is that we're going after here. So I've got a contact us form, and I've got a course that I want to sell. I'm going to start with the contact us form. So if I want somebody to fill out my form, then I have to ask myself, well, what is the right category? They're not buying anything. They're not adding it to the cart. And then you want to be really careful because you can say, oh, well, they're contacting me. But when I hover over this, it says when a customer contacts your business by phone, SMS, email, or chat. Well, that's not this. So you can kind of see where you would get a little, you know, turned about. I'm going to say submit lead form. That one makes the most sense. But if they're booking an appointment, if they're actually choosing a date and a time, then you might want to say book appointment. So I'll say submit lead form. And then the conversion name, in terms of naming convention, you want to be really careful if you have a lot of conversions because you don't want to get lost. So let's say that you have a contact us form on every single page of your website, and you have 30 pages. And each of the forms is different for whatever reason. You don't want to just put contact us here because then you're not going to know which one of the 30 it is. So just make sure that you're really clear with your nomenclature. I'm not going to be because I have one form, so it's not necessary for me. Here's another example where we will break the rule. Google's going to ask you to assign a value to this conversion. And you know, in some instances, you're looking at that going, well, gosh, I don't know what it is. You can reverse engineer this. Let's say that you sell your consulting, you know, your average consulting package is $1,000. And you know that out of every 10 leads that you get, you're going to close at least one of them. Well, that means that every lead is worth $100, right? Because if you close 10 leads, then you get $1,000. So this is a $100 conversion. You can do that math if you want to. I'm going to ask you not to. Instead, we're going to come over here and say, don't use a value for this conversion. Note that Google says this is not recommended. There's so many things that Google doesn't recommend that we're going to do anyway. And I don't mean to keep beating up on Google, by the way. I think they're a solid company. I think that they've actually got like a really high integrity approach to life. I just don't think they know how to use their tool as well as some other people know how to use their tool. The best example I've ever been given of that is, I think Ryan Dice said that Fender makes the best guitar, but Fender doesn't make the best guitar player. So don't be too afraid of going against the grain with Google, because a lot of what they're doing is maybe in their best interest, not yours. So we're not going to use a value for this conversion action yet. However, there are use cases where you actually want to begin assigning a value. And one of them is if there are certain conversion actions that you want to prioritize over others. So let's say you have 5 forms on your website, but you know, one of them is really valuable. If somebody fills out this form, there's, you know, way more context. I'm asking for different things. You know, for me, a good example would be I run Google Ads professionally. And if I have a single use client, well, that's a great client for me. But if I have a white label partner, if I have somebody who's like, oh, I've got, you know, 30 clients that I want to bring to you, that's worth many multiples. So what I might do is once I start aggregating the data, I might go in there and show Google that the value for the white label partner form is exponentially higher than the value for the generic form. And the number that you're assigning to that form is going to be dependent on your business model, like I mentioned earlier with the map. But don't do this yet. You don't want Google to begin prioritizing conversion actions until you start driving traffic to it and start seeing what's possible without Google's prioritization. This is where machine learning works against us. You don't want to give the machine so much rope that it just runs off in the wrong direction. And you also might not know what this number is. So right now we're going to say don't use a value. And then as you develop a use case to begin adding a value, then you can loop that back in. And again, if you've got questions, drop them in the chat. So far, I'm not seeing any questions, so I'm going to keep going. Under count, you can count every submission as a conversion or only one submission as a conversion. Because this is a form and they're contacting us, I'm only going to count one. Because if you've contacted me and then you contact me again, that's not worth anything to me. Or worth anything more. Now, if you schedule an appointment and every time you schedule, you have to pay, then I would count every. If you purchase a product, I would count every. But we're only going to count one here. The click-through conversion window, we're going to expand to 90 days. Well, that means if somebody clicks and then buys later, Do we still want Google to be able to track it? And you can track that up to, or track it and attribute it back to the campaign. You can track it and attribute it up to 90 days. You absolutely want to do this, especially if you have long sales cycles. If you've got a long sales cycle and people take time to figure out what it is that they want to do, then you want to give them the opportunity to, still provide you with that data. View through conversion window, I'm going to keep it one day. I don't see this impacting things much, but I believe that will change as we start to use more display-based advertising. This means that if somebody sees your ad, even if they don't click on it, are we going to attribute a conversion back to that? I don't like view through conversions for anything that's bottom of the funnel. So anything that's intent-based. I think view through conversions are great for, if you're running a massive display marketing campaign and doing brand awareness and you just want people to get to know you, then your view through conversion, you might want to set this really high. But for people that are going to Google saying, buy this thing now, I don't like view through conversions, because if they didn't click, then they weren't relevant. And then if they found you through a different conduit, you don't necessarily want to give Google credit for that. This including conversion columns is really important. Remember earlier I said, track every single conversion action that happens on your site. Every chat, every download, every lead magnet, every offer. Well, some of them you might want to still track, but you don't necessarily want Google to optimize for. So if I want people to fill out my contact us form, but I also have a lead magnet that I'm offering in case they don't, my contact us form, I'm definitely going to include. But my lead magnet, I might come in here and say, you know what, don't include that. What's cool about it, I don't have any proof of this, but anecdotally, I can say that I have seen Google begin to use the conversion actions that we're not tracking in order to determine which prospects might take advantage of the conversion actions that we are tracking. So they're using it kind of as an indication of who might be interested in the future. So we are going to include this in conversions. And then down here, and by the way, if you don't include it in conversions, you have to have at least one of these for every campaign that you build. Otherwise, you're not optimizing for anything. And then down here under attribution model, this gets really fun for me. You're going to choose last click if you don't know what you're doing. Last click is the easiest. It's the most straightforward. What this means is if somebody's clicked on multiple ads, which ad gets the credit? And this is actually really important because Google's going to optimize your campaign accordingly. And if we're on a last click attribution model, that's actually dangerous, because if somebody found your business through ad number one, but purchased through your remarketing ad, well, Google's going to give all the credit to the remarketing ad. And what that means is if you look at your campaigns, you're like, gosh, my ad number one didn't perform at all. I'm going to turn that off. Well, that was your acquisition strategy. That's how you're getting your customers. And so really what I think the ideal attribution model is time decay. The problem with time decay is it requires a little bit of know-how when you're reviewing your data, meaning you have to expand your date range enough to understand that it might take multiple touches before somebody converts. And you'll also end up with fractional conversions. And if you see that, you have to know how to expand even further. If you feel like, gosh, man, I don't want to dive into that, then go last click. There are some risks to it, but it's the simplest, most straightforward. And for many bottom of the funnel offers, it typically works because, a lot of those are linear. Somebody says, I need a personal relationship coach. And then they hop on your site and they see, oh, there's a coach. I fill out the form, bam. And so, that's kind of like the one and done. If you're more worried about where your customers come from, then you can select first click. Linear allows for attribution across all of your ads. It's tough though. While that sounds appealing, I think that's better for brand building campaigns. And it's kind of tough because you still end up with all the fractional issues that you end up with time decay, but you don't end up with any lead intelligence that tells you what it is that you're supposed to be doing. So I don't really like linear. I like position-based, but again, you have to know what you're doing. Position-based gives a ton of credit to the first and the last click, and then everything in between gets split evenly. And then you can't use data-driven unless you spend a ton of money. I forget what the threshold is now. They just changed it. I think it might be like $50,000 or something. But you have to have enough clicks and enough data in order to use data-driven attribution. So we're going to leave that one alone for now because I don't anticipate any of us being able to do that. I'm going to choose last click attribution. And again, last click attribution is kind of I don't want to call it the gold standard because it's the default. It's kind of the if you don't know what to do, choose last click. So create and continue. And now that my conversion action is set up, oh, we got a question. I'm so excited. I'd like to go over time decay in the attribution model. You mentioned having to drill down in the data to understand. Yes, Liz, I won't have enough time to do that today, but I've got a YouTube video on this. So if you go check me out on YouTube, and let me just give you all my YouTube channel now, not to shamelessly self-promote, but it's free. And I just want you to know where all the good stuff is if we don't have time to get to some of it. So I'm dropping this into chat, and you've got access to my YouTube. So I have a video on how to use time decay attribution inside of YouTube, and it's awesome. And it's very recent, so it's it's up to date information. I hope that's helpful, and I hope y'all don't mind me glazing over some of these by sending you to other resources. But they're my resources, so I trust them anyway. Cool. So we've created a conversion action, and now Google wants us to set that conversion action up on the website. And there's a couple of ways to do that. We're going to use Google Tag Manager. This is the harder way to do it than just installing it on your site, but it's the more robust, and it's going to make sure long term that you have the ability to properly manage all of your tags. Oh, thank you so much, Ned. I appreciate you. Sorry, y'all, I didn't post the link in the right place. She fixed it. That's so funny, too, because I just told everybody, make sure that you're chatting to everybody. And here I am, egg on my face. So we're going to choose use Google Tag Manager. And then it's going to give us all this gobbledygook. And you're going to just like be scared off by it, which is fine, because I'm scared off by it, too. And by the way, I'm not a Google Tag Manager expert or pro or any of those things. What you're going to do is you're going to go to Google Tag Manager. So just search for Google Tag Manager and you'll see it pop up. And then you're going to sign up for a Google Tag Manager account if you don't already have one. If you have one, just sign in. And then over here in the top right-hand corner, you're going to say create account. So we're creating a brand new Tag Manager account. And inside of Tag Manager, now we need to give it our account name. And so I'm just going to call this Imperial Test. You can name it whatever you want. I like to share data anonymously with Google. I think this actually helps everybody. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. Here we go. So this is test site for Simplero. Your URL, and by the way, you can't use the HTTPS, all that gobbledygook. URL is really important. If you don't name your container with your full URL, I've seen some reporting issues. So make sure that your full URL is the container name. And then it's going to ask you the platform that we want to track. Obviously for us, it's going to be web. And then select create. And then Google says, you owe me your firstborn and your limb and your soul. And you say, yes, that's what we do. And now it's given us codes. And what's really cool is Simplero makes it so easy, because Simplero is awesome at knowing where to install these codes. So I'm going to copy my head code first, kick it over to Simplero. And then in the configuration section, Calvin has made it super easy for us to know where to install this. Now, I'm on a membership site. If you're on the main site, it's the exact same function, but maybe just slightly different in the navigation. Simplero's got a great help portal, and it shows you exactly where to install Google Tag Manager. But I put my head code inside of the tracking, and then I'm going to go find my my body code, which is actually less important, to be honest with you, but we're still going to install it. And bam, now I've got Google Tag Manager installed on my website. I'm done. I did it. I feel great. Now that Google Tag Manager is installed, now we need to set up the conversion action. So what we just did is we just took a box and we put it on the website and we said, wait here. And it's this great big empty box that lives on the back end of your website. And now Google Tag Manager has access to put anything inside of that box that it wants. And what's really cool about Tag Manager is it's not just Google. You could do like other tracking codes. Like if you sign up for Wicked Reports or True Conversion Hotjar, if you're running Facebook ads, if you're running ads in another network, you can use Tag Manager to manage all of your tags. And you can actually create some really cool custom nifty fun stuff, feel free to dive in Tag Manager. There's a thought leader out there named Chris Mercer. He owns a company called Measurement Marketing. So if you ever wanted to dive really deep into Tag Manager or into Google Analytics, I recommend go hunting down Chris. Brilliant. I paid for his education for a long time. So inside of Google Tag Manager, there's three things to know about in Tag Manager. There's variables, triggers, and tags. Variables allow you to tell Tag Manager what something is. So like how much of something just took place or what something costs. We're actually not going to use variables for this tutorial because we're kind of going the real simple way. We're going binary. Either they did it or they didn't. But know that there's a way to pass more information than that through if you wanted to. You'd have to dive a little bit deeper than that. Triggers let Google Tag Manager know when something happens. So if somebody lands on this page, bam, then trigger it. And tags let it know what happens when the trigger takes place. And you'll piece that together a little bit more when we actually do it together. So we're going to build our trigger first. And the trigger that we're going to build first is a page view. So remember that I'm building a trigger in order to track the conversion when somebody fills out my contact us form. And so what I want to do is come back to Google Ads. And my trigger is going to be called contact us form. Remember naming conventions, be as specific as you possibly can. I don't need to be super specific here because I only have one form, but make sure that you're being really, really clear as far as what this trigger is and what it's tracking. Once I've named it, I'm going to click on this little bubble here and it's going to say, what is it that is the catalyst for this trigger? And for us, it's going to be page view. There's a bunch of ways to track inside of Tag Manager. This is always, and I can't say always is a ubiquitous truth, but more often than not, this is the safest way to do it. If you try to load on Java or, you know, track a button click or any of those things, there's a ton of drop off and Google can't track all of those as reliably. What I like about tracking page views is if somebody goes to a page that they couldn't have gotten to without having completed a conversion action, you basically know that they converted. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to track the traffic that comes to our thank you page. So we've selected page view, and then I'm going to select this trigger fires on some page views. Now, this is where people go wrong. What they'll do is they'll say, oh, when somebody lands on my contact us page, that's incorrect. What you want is when they land on the thank you page of the conversion action. So if I fill this form out, it's going to bring me to, oh my goodness, isn't that lucky? Let's see if it works this time. There we go. It's going to bring me to the thank you page. And so here's my thank you page. And I know you can't get to my thank you page without having gone through my contact us form first. So I know you've gone to my thank you page, you've converted. So I'm going to come in here and I'm going to say page URL and make sure to change that. And then there's a bunch of opportunities here. So if I wanted to, I could say contains. And the contains would just be thank you desk contact. The problem with that is, oops, where did I go? You want to be really careful with the contains because if I put contains thank you and I've got 50 thank you pages, then I've put myself in a situation where many different things can fire this particular conversion action. So I'm going to be kind of lazy right now, to be honest with you, and I'm going to say equals. Oh no, where did it go? Sorry, y'all. Can you tell I'm not good at navigating this whole thing? Bam. So we're going to say equals, and I'm going to give it the full URL. Contains is probably a better best practice, but it requires a little bit more structure in terms of your naming conventions and nomenclature. So if you've got a really solid site in terms of the way that it's structured, then you might want to use contains. I'm using equals just because it's the quickest way to make sure that this is exactly the URL that I want to fire this trigger on. So I click save, and now I've got my trigger built. Great, and now I'm going to go build my tag. And the tag is what tells Google what's happening when the trigger fires. So we're going to say, again, contact us form. And tag configuration, I'm going to click on tag. And then it's going to ask me, what is it that we're doing? And I need Google Ads conversion tracking. Now, don't get confused. There's Google Ads remarketing, which we want. There's Google Ads conversion linker, which incidentally, you should probably install. I'm not going to go through it in this tutorial because we don't have time. But conversion linker makes sure that you're tracking conversions through specifically, I think iOS, but through applications that aren't always passing all the data through that you need. So make a note for yourself that you have to add Google conversion linker, and just you can search for how to do that. I should shoot a YouTube video on that now that I'm thinking about it. But just search, you know, how to use Google conversion linker in Google Tag Manager. And all that does is make sure that your data is cleaner and you're getting more of it. What we're gonna select here is Google Ads conversion tracking. And now that we have Google Ads conversion tracking, it's asking us for all this stuff. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. I have all that stuff. That's great. So first we're going to take our conversion ID and we're going to drop it there. And then we're going to take our conversion label and we're going to drop it here. I'm not going to fill out the rest of this information. You could, if you wanted to, know that this is accessible to you. So if you wanted to pass a value through, you can. Some of this other stuff gets a little bit more advanced. We're not going to dive into it, but I want you to know that it's here. So for my advanced users, realize that there's a lot of capabilities inside of Tag Manager in terms of, you know, how you're sequencing things, what information you push through, et cetera. We're not going to do any of that, mostly because I'm not smart enough. Once you have your tag created, then you're going to choose the trigger that fires the tag. And you'll notice that it automatically created an all pages trigger. This is really helpful, by the way, when you want to set up a remarketing campaign, because you can remarket based off of anybody that's visited any page. We're going to choose our contact us form and select add. And then we're going to select save. And now you're like, I'm done, but you're not. And I've made this mistake. You want to submit. Google's going to ask you to name this iteration if you want to. You don't have to. It's helpful if you do this a bunch. If you're super deep into Google Tag Manager, I'm not going to. It'll ask me again. I'm going to say skip. And now my trigger and my tag have been created. So before me having done that, they wouldn't have worked. But we still want to test. So back at the workspace, you can go over to preview. And in previews, my URL still in my notes. Dang it. Hang tight, y'all. Hang tight. So in preview, we're going to go to the page that we want to test. And then I'm going to say stop. And Google's going to say gobbledygook. And then it's going to open up my page. And you'll notice that it has GTM debug here. in appended to the URL, which you actually want to see. And then here in the bottom right-hand corner, it's got a little debugger connected. Inside of my preview, I can see that in chronological order, it's telling me everything that's happening. So the container loaded, everything's ready. And then if I fill out this form, check this out, this is Wicked Ninja. I hope it works and I don't embarrass myself. Fill out my form. Well, that's weird. Is it gonna capture me? Yeah, no. Hold on, y'all. Fire hydrants. Let's do this together. Did I miss one? No. Nice. And now I've gone to the thank you page. And when I go to the tag assistant, what I should see is that that tag has fired. And bam, the tag fired. So you can see tag's fired, tag's not fired. So when I was just on the homepage, the tag hadn't fired yet. And then when I ended up filling out the form and I'm on the right page, the tag is fired. So I now know that this is properly tracking. So I'm good. I feel good. Oh, I have to leave. Gosh darn it. I always forget to do this. So this is the new version of Google Preview, by the way. And if you don't leave Preview, I actually think I'm good. Stop debugging. That's what I needed to do. So make sure that you stop the debugging. Otherwise, every time you visit the page, it's going to be blowing those little pop-ups up. It's not a big deal. It just gets annoying. So now I've left Preview and I'm done. And I'm going to leave Tag Manager open because we're going to need to build a conversion action for the purchase, remember? But we're good inside of Tag Manager. And this is a good note. Simplero allows you to take everybody who converts and sends them to a new thank you page. Do that because that's the best and most reliable way in order for you to track conversions. Now I've created my conversion action. And when I select done, it's going to say that I'm finished. Now the tracking status is going to be unverified for a couple of hours. You want to make sure that you come back and you check it, and you want to be triggering a couple of conversions because Google is looking at everything that's happening on that page in order to verify that conversion. I spilled. Cool. So just to confirm, I've got everything here that I want, which is we're counting it one at a time, 90-day click-through conversion rate, including conversions. Yes. Awesome. I feel good. Now we're going to go build our campaign. So you can go back and you can get to campaigns a lot of different ways. So if I'm, you know, in my main navigation, I'm lost, I go to all campaigns and then it says, do you want to build a new campaign? Or I can click on campaigns and click on this little blue bubble, whatever it is you want to do, or click here. Google makes it really easy to build campaigns. So we're going to select any one of those that you want and say new campaign. Now, this is interesting. I used to tell people to use create a campaign without a goals guidance. However, at some point, what we found was using a goal guidance actually began to improve the efficacy of the campaign. I think it's the same reason that choosing the right category helps, because if you tell Google what you want it to do, it will do more of that thing. The reason I used to tell people to create a campaign without a goal guidance is because if you choose a goal guidance, it limits the features and functionality available to you. But what's interesting is relatively recently, what it started to do is if you don't choose a goal guidance, it also limits the features and functionalities available to you. And so it's, you know, kind of a rock and a hard place here, and you have to know what to choose. So what we're going for in this particular instance, we want people to fill out our contact us form. So we're going after leads. So you'll see that I can optimize for sales, which is like an actual product purchase. I know you might think like, well, I want sales. You don't, unless somebody's actually buying online. You know, website traffic, that's more brand awareness, that type of thing. Product brand and consideration, that's like display based. They don't even click on your website. Brand awareness and reach. To be honest with you, I can't tell you the big use case between the two of these. I feel like brand consideration and brand awareness are very close. We're going to click on leads. And so when I select leads, it's going to ask me the campaign type. Now, when most people think of Google, they think of search. That's when somebody searches for, you know, whatever type of coach you are. If somebody wants to drop their business into chat, I'd be really interested because I could use these examples. But search is what we think of when we think of Google. Display is the Google Display Network. The Google Display Network is the most prolific thing on the internet. It reaches 90% of all internet users on the planet. 65% of those users are reached on a daily basis. It's really worth meditating on. The Google Display Network is effectively the internet. Anytime you're on a website and you see ads popping up and you notice that they're from Google, this is the Google Display Network. Very, very powerful tool. We're not going to go over it today, but it's worth knowing that it exists. And what's nice is the traffic is super cheap. Shopping is Google's shopping feed, which also ends up, if you're using smart shopping, using Google Display Network. Video isn't just YouTube. Video is also video-based display, but if you wanted to run a YouTube ad, this is where you would do it. Smart shopping, these are really cool. It's algorithmic. We're not going to go over it. And discovery ads are Google's entire ecosystem going out trying to find new customers for you. And I see we've got a restaurant coach. Awesome, Heather, self-development coach. Yeah, Nita's right. If you don't mind, if anybody has a business name, I'd love to even potentially visit your website. We can do some hot seats at the end of this if we have time. So we're going to choose search because that's what we think of and that's what you want to build. Google's going to ask you to select some of these goals. We're not going to do this because I actually don't like the restrictions that are applied when I select these dropdowns. So select continue. And now we're going to name our campaigns. Going back to name conventions, make sure that they're ultra specific. I'm just going to call this general campaign. But name your campaigns in a way that you're going to understand what they are. Breezing through this, you want to be included in the search network. You also want to include Google search partners. These are other partners that use Google search algorithm, and there's a lot of quality traffic here. You don't want to be in the display network. I love, love, love the display network. I think it's super powerful. However, you don't want Google to run a search campaign and also start spending money on display, because display will eat through your budget rapidly. So if you're running a search campaign, run a search campaign. If you're running a display campaign, run a display campaign. Don't let Google talk you into running both. And look at them. Don't miss the opportunity. I know what you're up to, Google. You don't scare me. Some of the more settings to be aware of, you can have a start and end date if you want to. I tend not to do this, but there are use cases where it would make sense. For my advanced users, there's advanced tracking that you can jump in here. If you know what this is, you know how to use it. If you don't worry about it. Dynamic search ads are an amazing tool inside of Google Ads that basically read your website, decide who you're applicable to, and then basically automates the whole thing. We're not going to use it, but it's worth knowing that it exists, especially if you have a local business. I've seen DSA work really well for local businesses. And you can define your ad schedule. When do you want your ads to show? Don't do this. Everybody says, well, I'm open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So that's when I'll run my ads. The problem is that's not when your customers are looking. Far too often, people are actually doing product research nights and weekends. Or you just don't know. So don't make any ad schedule yet. Run traffic first, see what the data says. And then if you start noticing that you're seeing a bunch of superfluous traffic at a certain time, you can shut that traffic off. Although, to be honest with you, even then, I've noticed some times where I was like, gosh, I'm getting a bunch of traffic and no conversions. And I cut that time off. And then I noticed that other conversion areas died down. And that's because I think anecdotally that people were researching this at the time when I thought they weren't converting and then converting later. So be really careful at adjusting your schedule. The benefit you have with pay-per-click is you're only paying if somebody clicks, which means that you should just be available all the time, because if they want to click, they're probably applicable, assuming you're bidding on the right keywords. Locations, this is where Google's going to come mess us up. So choose the location that you want. Let's say that you just wanted to go after United States and Canada, or I can get like super granular if I want to. I could say Arizona here and decide to target Arizona. But if there's a zip code inside of Arizona that I don't like for whatever reason I can't service, then I can exclude that particular zip code, or I can do an advanced search and I can drop a pin if I wanted to. Where's my pin drop thing? How do I do that? Let's delete that. Oh, radius, that's what I was looking for, sorry y'all. So let's say that I wanted to drop a pin here and then I can target a 20 mile radius. But if I wanted to change that to 5 mile radius, then the pin that it gives me now is smaller. I can start to really carve up the geography that I'm targeting, which by the way, you want to do. You want to get real specific with where you're targeting. Now, if you're selling, I just noticed that somebody says I'm a parent coach. Mary's a parent coach in Atlanta. So what Mary want to do is say Atlanta, and we're going to go to Atlanta, Georgia, and we're going to say target. Or if she wanted to go to Atlanta, drop a pin and then drop a radius that's 10 miles further out, just to make sure that she's getting some of the broader regions. And with the understanding that Google's not cutting with a scalpel here. They don't know exactly where everybody is, because there's a bunch of things going into play, your IP address, your current location, et cetera. So choose your location. I'm just going to say United States. Under location options, Google says people in, regularly in, or who've shown interest in your targeted location. You don't want to do this. Because if somebody's searching for, potentially traveling to Atlanta because they're headed there for a wedding, and then they're like, oh, you know what? I need a parenting coach in a separate thought. They don't want a parenting coach in Atlanta. So we're going to change this to people in or regularly in your targeted locations, even though Google says this is recommended. The exclude you can keep. That's perfectly fine. Language for search, we're taking the language off. And we're taking it off because people are searching in the language that you're defining. So if they have their browser setting to a different language, especially because there's so many multilingual users, you don't want to exclude them. For display, if there's a display campaign, I would have the language that you're marketing to assigned to the campaign. So search, no language, for display, add your language. Audiences, we're not going to use. We're not going to add any audience segmentation because we're bidding on keywords. So if somebody types in my keyword, I want to get in front of them regardless of the audience that they're in. but know that you could do this. So you can segment your audience a bunch of different ways, you know, interests and habits, those types of things. I don't recommend doing this for search campaigns, but it's really kind of cool for display campaigns. You can get really granular here. It's worth messing around with, specifically the in-market audience. In-market means wants to buy. So if I was an auto dealer and I go to in-market and I can see that people actually want to buy cars, the Google's gotten really good at figuring out who it is that actually wants to buy stuff. I'm not going to do this, so we're going to leave audience alone, but I wanted you to know that it exists. Your budget's going to be completely up to you. Notice this is hard because it's so dependent upon the business that you're in and what your competition is, but the average cost per click in the Google ecosystem is $2. Now, it goes way up. I pay $80 a click in my industry. You might pay $1 a click, and you can check. Google has a thing called Google Keyword Planner. If you go to Tools and Settings here, go to Keyword Planner. I've got a video on this inside of YouTube. Figure out what your average CPC is and assume that you want 500 clicks. And the reason you want 500 clicks is because we optimize off of what we call the statistician's model, which is the base 100 model, which means you need 100 clicks in order to make a strong decision. 500 clicks gives you 5 strong decisions. So if I had a $2 cost per click, then I want to spend $1,000. Now, I'm building one campaign. You might be building multiple campaigns, in which case you might be wanting to spread your spend across those campaigns. Be careful because you're diluting the efficacy of those campaigns with every time you spread spend. With Google Ads, you have to spend money in order to earn data. It's true with all paid advertising. And you can't, you know, there's this whole weird thing going on in the industry where everybody's like, oh yeah, how to make $1 million spending $1 a day. If that really worked, would they be selling you education? Or they would just be buying every business on the planet because they can make $1 million a day on, you know, or $1 million on $1 a day budget. You have to spend money. It's like the stock market. It's things are worth what people are willing to pay. And if your competitors are willing to pay more than you are, then you're going to get priced right out of the model. Liz says she's got a new course for corporate employees. That's super cool. Might focus on Wall Street. That's a great idea. So you could just, you know, you carve a geographic target right around Wall Street. You can go up to like, you know, Seattle, San Francisco, like Austin, anywhere where there's, you know, major Fortune 500 hubs. You can get real granular there. So we've got our budget. And then Google says, what do you want to focus on? Here's where we're going to break the rules again. You'll notice that I have a couple of bid strategies here. And yet there's more available. It's so funny what they restrict to. This is actually relatively new. They used to give us even more than this. You're going to select a bid strategy directly, which is not recommended. And then you're going to come down here and select manual CPC, which you'll notice is in a category all on its own. Sometimes enhanced CPC is going to be enabled for you if you have a conversion action already installed. If you don't, then you're not going to see it. Google's going to tell you that this is a bad idea. This is a good idea. You actually want to do this because you want to be able to see what the ecosystem looks like without Google's machine-based intervention. So you want to run manually first, get a sense as to what the baseline is, and then start using some of Google's automation. Liz is saying, what's a reasonable minimum budget to get useful results, data, or conversions? Liz, I would take whatever your average cost per click is going to be, and I won't know what that is, but you can go figure out using Google's Keyword Planner. Super, super easy. And then figure out what your average CPC is and try to get yourself 500 clicks. So if your average cost per click is $2, then I think a good budget is $1,000. If it's $1, then it'll be $500. You can start lower than that, but you won't be capturing enough data. Well, you won't be capturing as much data. So it just takes longer to learn. And then, you know, if you're making mistakes, you're actually making those mistakes for longer. So I like to spend into the Google ecosystem in order to earn the information back that we need. Now, you also don't want to spend too much either, because now you're sort of over, you know, it's over engineered in a lot of ways, and you're buying a bunch of data that is redundant. So I like that 500 click approach for small, you know, small businesses and, you know, single point conversion type campaigns. Was that helpful? Let me know if you have any follow-ups to that. Some of the more settings were in, I think applicable here. It's going to ask us what conversion actions to use. We already have our conversion action created, so we're going to use the account level conversion. If you have multiple conversion actions, you can select the conversion action that you want to use. It's not going to let me do that because I don't have multiple conversion actions. But if you have, you know, 10 different conversion actions and this campaign is meant specifically for one of them, then you can select the conversion actions that you want there. The ad rotation should always be best performing ads. I've seen, for whatever weird reason, people choose rotate ads and definitely don't do that. This is a catastrophic error. It'll kill your campaigns. Add extensions. I'm going to fly through this. You want to add as many extensions as possible. And I can't make this case boldly enough. one of the primary factors that goes into your ad rank is your actual ad in performance and the number of extensions that you have. So extensions are the things that happen. And let me show you an example. So I'll just say CRM software. This is the ad. These are extensions. So these additional links that you see show up, or these are extensions. What else would be an extension? It's hard to tell sometimes, but like phone numbers, add extensions. Let's see. These are all extensions. So here's a location extension, site link extension, structured snippet, call out. So there's a bunch of extra stuff that you can pile onto your ads that make your ads better. And what's kind of cool about it is you give Google the information, the extensions, and it's like a box of Legos. And you just say, hey, Google, here's everything that you can use. And then when somebody searches in real time, Google constructs your ad in a fraction of a second. It's amazing the way that it works. But they construct your ad for that user. This is where things get really scary and kind of insane. Google's collecting 70 million demographic and psychographic profiling factors on every single human that engages with the Google ecosystem in any way. It knows what adjectives appeal to you, what verbs you use, what colors are your favorite, whether or not you speed, who you communicate with, who you lie to, and it's able to build ads just for you. So the more stuff you give Google to customize for prospects, the more likely it is that they're going to be able to customize an ad that actually appeals to that prospect. Dan is asking, why is ad rotation a catastrophic error? Because the ad optimization inside of Google is one of the primary factors that helps A, improve your quality score, and then B, optimize your campaigns for conversion. And if you're rotating indefinitely, then you're not letting Google choose what's working best. And you'll notice when you have a lot of ads, Google chooses very quickly. So if I give Google 10 ads and you know spend a couple $1,000s, by the end of it, only one or two will be left standing. But if I say, and they'll be getting 80-90% of the budget. If I say rotate indefinitely among those 10 ads, then the two ads that were my highest performing were only getting 20% of the budget, which is, again, a catastrophic error potentially. So you want to let the machine learning take place. I'm going to build some extensions for you. Let's do our, you know, and I got YouTube videos on all of these. So given for the sake of time, do y'all mind if I skip the ad extensions? I've got YouTube videos on exactly how to build them. Know that they're wildly important, but I don't want to waste time. So I'm going to keep going. But make sure that you check out how to build extensions because it's really important. And they're super, super, super easy. They take like, you know, a couple of minutes for each one of them. So after you've created your extensions, you're going to say save and continue. And then you're going to create your ad group. So the hierarchical structure is campaigns, and then ad groups live in campaigns. So you can have, you know, a campaign that's targeting people that, you know, want a free consult, and then ad groups for the various types of consults you offer. You know, for our parenting coaches, maybe it's single parents, a two-parent household, nights and weekends or whatever. So you could have different ad groups for like different calls to action or different value propositions or different categories. So for my contact us form, I'm just going to say consulting. And then your default bid, this is interesting because when you go to Google Keyword Planner, as I mentioned, you're going to know what your average cost per click is. What you're going to want to do is put your default bid at about 20% higher than your average cost per click. So if my average cost per click was $5, I might put it at $6. And that's because I want to make sure that I'm putting myself in a position where I'm receiving some of the traffic. That's not always true. There's sometimes where you might want to underbid, especially if you know you have a hyper competitive ecosystem. But for this particular instance, especially because I have a lower spend, I'm going to have a default bid that's a little bit higher because I want to see what happens when I'm actually capturing quality traffic. The worst thing to do in Google Ads is to bid so low that you end up on the bottom, you know, the first page or the bottom of the ad stack. And then you start getting these leads that aren't great. And you're like, oh, Google doesn't work. The leads suck. Well, the leads you're getting suck. And it's because you're getting the person who clicked on every single ad and then filled out all the forms. You know, that's your looky-loos and your price shoppers and your solicitors. You want to be in that top four pack, and preferably, you know, the higher the position, the better, assuming that it's financially feasible. So in the beginning, I like to bid aggressively on a cost per click basis because I want to make sure that I have a real view as to what the lead quality could be. And now we're going to enter our keywords. So let's say for the sake of this discussion that my website is a Google Ads consultant. You can enter your website URL and Google gives you a bunch of keyword options. It's kind of cool the way that it works, but I don't recommend it because you want to make sure that your keywords are specific to your ad group. So, you know, in this particular instance, using the example I just gave you, if I'm a Google Ads consultant, I might have ad group for Google Ads consultation, for pay-per-click consultation, and for paid media consultation. Well, in my Google Ads, let's say Google Ads consulting. Excuse me. in my Google Ads keyword list, I don't want to use the word pay-per-click. That would be in my pay-per-click ad group. So make sure that you're categorically tight so you can tell what's working. Google has different match types, and this is really important for you to learn. The match types are going to let Google know how expansive they can be. They have broad match, phrase match, and exact match. And they actually have a fourth one that I'll teach you. Here's what these mean. Broad match means anything that even kind of sounds like this. So if I say, you know, Google Ads Consulting, Google could see somebody who searches for PPC help and say, yeah, basically the same thing. And by the way, they get that expensive. So be careful with broad match because Google does, it reaches very far. Now, really recently, last quarter of 2020, Google rolled out something that we're affectionately calling Broadimation. If you use broad match with smart bidding, which we don't have installed here, if you'll remember, we went and used manual CPC, there's something about it that Google's actually able to really start to learn what it is people want and send you more of those people. So it works well. I've got YouTube videos on it. I don't recommend it for my newbies because there's so many things that can go wrong and it's hard for you to diagnose. So I'm going to recommend you don't use broad match. Pardon me. Pausing for a second. Anybody have any questions? Nothing so far. Cool. I'm going to recommend you don't use broad match and realize that broad automation is maybe a more advanced strategy. But what we want to do, and it's funny because broad match is Google default. You want to use phrase match and then exact match. Oops. Spell right, Kasim. Doesn't matter if I capitalize or not. Phrase match means any time these words are used in any context. So somebody could be searching for, you know, best Google Ads consulting company. And why can't I spell? That's amazing. And because this phrase exists inside of the search, then this will trigger my ad. Exact match says they have to search for this. So if they search for best Google Ads consulting company, I wouldn't show up. They have to search for Google Ads consultant. You want to use both. But the other thing that you want to use, and this is a wicked ninja trick, is what we call broad match modified. So if you say Google plus ads plus consulting, God, I'm so embarrassed. What this does is it gives Google, it's a little bit more restrictive than broad match, but it gives Google more room to go out and to play. So you're like, hey, Google, I need someone who's looking for Google search specifically, advertising inside of Google and consulting. But on each of these levels, there's some semantic extension that you can take. And you'll start to notice some irrelevant searches, but you also start to see people searching for things that you didn't know that they were going to search for. This is a really good opportunity for you to learn. So as people are searching, you're going to learn what they're searching for. And then when you find phrases that you really like, because you're monitoring what it is they're searching for, you add them as phrase and exact match. So this is our exploratory keyword. And then these are the keywords you use when you know, I really want those phrases. So if you have phrases that you know for a fact are just going to crush it because they're at the epicenter of your business, use phrase and exact match. If you're not sure, use broad match. And what I might do here too is I'll have a little bit of a semantic expansion. So I might say Google Ads agency, Google Ads, you know, business, Google Ads help, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But again, making sure that it's all aligned with my specific ad group. So I can create a new ad group here if I want to. Feel free to. We're not going to do that for the sake of time. Save and continue. It's going to ask me to create my ads. You want to create two expanded text ads and one responsive search ad. I'm going to show you how to do that. Our final URL is the website address of our wherever we want people to go. So don't use your homepage. Use the page that's most applicable to the offer that you're making. So if you're giving people a free consultation, then send them to your free consultation page. Liz is asking, does cost increase the number of keywords? No, great question. I should have covered this. It doesn't. You can have as many keywords in your ad group as you want. Well, maybe that's not true. I've never hit a ceiling. I'll say that. I like the rule of thumb is 5 to 15 keywords in an ad group. If you have too many keywords and not enough spend, you know, if I have 1,000 keywords that I'm targeting and only $1,000, Google isn't going to have the ability to really test what's working and what's not because there's going to be no opportunity to deliver multiple times for multiple keywords. So I like that 5 to 15 keyword bucket. It ends up being the friendliest. You'll see a lot of thought leaders talk about something called SKAGs, single keyword ad group. Don't do that. It was great years ago when Google wasn't as smart, but now they're just dinosaurs that don't understand that their ideas are stupid. So don't use SKAGs, no matter what anybody says. In your display URL, you have the opportunity here to reinforce what it is that you're offering people. Now, what's interesting is you could put anything that you want here. So I'm going to say Google Ads. I like to reinforce the service and the offer, free consult. And what's funny is it will still click through to this. So what they see and where they go are two separate things. This is another advertising opportunity. And I'm in responsive search ads right now. Oh, this is so funny. This is new too. They used to have us do text ads first. And now they're having us do responsive search ads first. That's just them prioritizing automation. I'll show you why that's different in just a moment. Now it's going to ask us to come up with a bunch of headlines. And what's cool is Google is going to split test all these headlines against each other. So every ad only shows 2 to 3 headlines. The third headline is optional. So it's always going to show 2, maybe a third. So you're going to come in here and say, solution. This is my company name. That sounds really not good typing, but I'm just going to do whatever. Reconsult. Oh, and by the way, with all your ad copy, you always want to use title case. Every word in every sentence is capitalized. Free consultation. It's nerve-wracking when people watch you type. You want to take up as much of the real estate as you possibly can here. So I've got 30 characters, and I want to occupy as much as I can. You also you can't use too much punctuation. So if I had 2 exclamation points, Google would disapprove that. Sometimes if I have 1, they just don't like it. And you can't capitalize letters or Google gets really mad unless they're acronyms, and sometimes they sneak through. Populate as many headlines as you can. I think it's 20. I forget. And then there's 5 descriptions. All the headlines, all the descriptions. What Google's going to do is it's going to compile these ads together for you and figure out what headlines and what description combinations work the best for what clients. So populate as many of these as you can. I'm not a creative, as I mentioned, but I can give you some pro tips. There's a saying in marketing that features tell, benefits sell. You don't want to just tell people what the features are. You want to tell people how their life is going to change when you engage with them. Sell the transition. Give them the before and after. Like, what is it that they're going to receive? Ryan Dice says that people only buy to either change or reinforce their identity. And so what's the identity change or reinforcement they're purchasing here? And you know, sometimes it's really obvious. If you're selling luxury automobiles, it's super obvious. If you're selling Google Ad services, it's not quite as clear. But then you dig into it and you're like, you know what? They're reinforcing their identity as a business owner. I'm helping feed their business. And so they need to know, like, hey, there's a predictable pipeline coming, so you don't have to worry. So make sure you spend some time in your ad copy. This is where I've got writers on staff because I'm not great at this. For your descriptions, you can have multiple sentences here. So we can say, 15 years in business, digital marketer. And I you want to fill up all 90 characters. I'm not going to sit here and make y'all watch me type. So I'm just giving them, here's some reasons to do business with us. And what I haven't done in the description that you should absolutely do. Well, yeah, you want to always be making an offer. You're always selling something. And Dana's asking a great question. Is it mandatory or recommended to have keywords in the headline? Yes, absolutely, which I should have done. And forgive me, y'all. This isn't particularly my forte. I'm kind of the data guy. But the more, you don't want to fluff the keywords. So you don't want to like just put keywords everywhere for no reason. But having the keywords populate the ad copy really helps with your quality score. So I can't believe I was about to glaze over that, actually. Dana, thank you so much for saving me. Really appreciate you. Advanced URL options if you want to do some tracking. If you know what this is, great. If you don't, don't worry about it. And then when you're done, that's responsive. Text ads. Is this going to save? Sorry, y'all. This is the first time I've encountered Google functioning this way. Text ads are the exact program that we just went through, but 3 titles, 2 descriptions. That's it. So you're not giving Google options. You're telling Google exactly what the ad looks like. And realize that the third title is optional. And we made this mistake actually recently. It was a couple years ago. Our writer, she said in the second one, it was, it asked a question that the third title answered. And half the time, the third title doesn't show up. But what's really funny is it converts really well. And I think it's because people want the answer to the question. So just, be careful. but you want two expanded text ads and one responsive search ad. We're not going to go through all that because we don't have time. Now that I've created my ads, what one issue? Let's fix it. This is kind of cool that that happened. Actually, you can see what. Oh, punctuation symbols. Schedule a free consultation now. Let's see if that worked. Isn't that funny? Oh, so the first issue I got is because I used a piece of punctuation Google doesn't like. And I mentioned earlier that sometimes it won't even let me get away with one exclamation point. Sometimes it will. And I think more often than description. And then it says that I'm not going to get any traffic because it doesn't like my keywords, which I kind of don't care about right now. So I'm going to see if it's going to let me skip that because I don't actually want to get traffic. So what Google's telling me here is well, your campaigns will not serve ads. Let me just go back and make sure I'm not glazing over something that should be. Oh, no traffic expected because of the average CPC. Let's do what happens when I do that. There we go. So if Google doesn't think you're going to get traffic, it's going to raise an error, and it's worth paying attention to because it's like you're not bidding high enough. Your keywords aren't, you know, robust enough, whatever. It wants some more ads and extensions. That's a good best practice to follow. We're not going to do that for the sake of the training. I'm going to select publish. You might want a credit card. Now, immediately go into all campaigns, click on your campaign, and pause your campaign because you actually don't want it to run right now. I want to breeze through some of the optimization steps to take. After you've launched, inside your campaign, you'll see I have my general search campaign. And in my general search campaign, I can see all my ad groups. So if you made multiple ad groups, they're here. And I'm just going to go top to bottom. Be really careful with Google's recommendations, by the way, because they're usually wrong. But you can see all your ad groups. And then you can also see what's called Auction Insights. This lets you see every single person that you're bidding against. Well, not every single person, but a lot of the people you're bidding against. This is phenomenal competitive intelligence. You can see who you're bidding against and when they beat you. So pay attention to your competitors, because if they're relevant, then you know you're doing a good job and you might want to compete more. And if they're not relevant, you might be bidding on the wrong key phrase. You can see all your ads and extensions. Now, you'll see every single ad and extension that exists inside this entire campaign. Sometimes what you might want to do is say, you know what, I'm going to go into this specific ad group. And notice that I'm in my campaign and in this ad group. But where this gets a little confusing is if you forgot where you navigated to and you click on ads, you're not going to see all your ads. You're only going to see the ads that you created for that ad group. But here are my ads, here are my extensions. Let me go back to the campaign level so you can see them all. And here's where I go to create more extensions if I want to. We're not going to dive into landing pages right now because I don't think it's quite relevant for our particular purposes. But the keywords, this is where you go to update, add, edit, delete keywords. This is where you go to add negative keywords. And there's this really amazing tool, negative. Here we go. Keyword list. Let me go find it for y'all. Is it these guys? Yeah, so these folks put together a list of 400 negative keywords. Actually, this isn't the list that I like. Is this it? Yes. So this guy put together a list of 400 negative keywords that you could consider using. And these are really important to have. If I am bidding on Google Ads, you know, consultant, and somebody searches for Google Ads consulting job, I don't want that search. And I don't want it because they're looking to get hired. They're not looking to, you know, to hire me. And so there's a bunch of negative keywords that you want to use. Employer, employers, employment, case studies. I actually kind of like that. Google Ads case studies is one that I'd want. So don't add all of these wholesale, but you want to go through and figure out, you know, Google Ads tutorials. I definitely don't want that. Learn how to, you know, Google Ads, none of that. So I'd find the negative keywords that I definitely want to pay for and add them to your negative keywords. And then every time somebody clicks on a keyword, it shows up in your search keywords. Well, it shows up in your search terms, excuse me. It used to. Google started deprioritizing this, so we're not getting all search terms, which is really frustrating, but you're getting most of them. So I'd say on you know, every day or every couple of days, come to search terms and make sure the things that people are searching for are relevant to your business. Anytime you see a search term that you don't want, figure out what about it is that you don't want and add that to your negative keywords. So if I paid for someone who said, learn Google Ads, I'd be like, damn it. But I'd go add learn to my negative keywords. That way I never encounter that again. And some semantic equivalent. So it might be like learn, tutorial, teach, Udemy, those types of things. Auction insights, again, on a keyword basis, who you're competing against. Audiences and demographics are really cool for other campaigns. We're not going to use them here, but this is where you narrow down. And then you have your overarching campaign settings. And so when I'm ready, What I might do is I might come in here and I might enable enhanced CPC. And what enhanced CPC will do is, once I've established that baseline that I told you about, enhanced CPC can spend more on single clicks if Google thinks there's a very strong opportunity for me to earn that particular conversion. And enabling enhanced CPC allows Google, it used to be to increase your bids by 250%. I think it's gone more than that. So basically, it's almost writing them a blank check, but you're giving them a blank check because they know who's ready to convert and who's not. So really important to do. But this is where you can go to modify your budget, change your bid strategy. If and when you're ready, you can start using smart bidding. I'm not against smart bidding, by the way. I think it's a phenomenal tool. I just think it's really dangerous to use from the outset. You want to identify your baseline first and then move into smart bidding. And then, you know, these smart bidding actions, I've got a ton of tutorials on YouTube as to what each of these bid strategies are and what they mean. But it's worth getting to know just a little bit. And we can see our campaign status is paused. I had every intention of teaching you all how to run a course purchase campaign. How's our threshold for paying? Are y'all sick of hearing me talk? Can I get some thumbs up? Well, let me ask a different way. Scale from 1 to 10. How has this gone so far? 1 is I hate your face and your voice, and 10 is I want to adopt you. Liz is saying keep going. I'm getting a 10. That's good. Danny gave me a 10. Awesome. 10's cool. So this is how we ran a lead generation campaign. I'm going to show you how to run a campaign on how to get people to purchase courses. And a lot of this is super redundant, so I'll skip the redundant parts, if that's cool with you guys, guys and gals. So in our all campaigns section, remember, if you get lost, just open this up and go to all campaigns. I'm in my overview. I'm going to say new campaign. And in this particular instance, where before we were searching for leads, now we're going for sales. And this will actually be really quick now to think about it, because we've done most of this. So we go to sales. We go to, let me back up. So sorry. Conversion actions. You need to set up a brand new conversion action for people who purchase your course. And the way to do that, by the way, is the exact way that we did it for people who fill out our form. So here's the course. Let's say that people are going to buy my course and they're like, yes, I definitely want this. That's awesome. I agree to the terms. No, don't do that. This is my thank you page. And you'll notice it's a different thank you page. You don't want to use the same thank you page for different conversion actions. My other one was thank you contact. This is thank you purchase. So the same process that I put you through inside of Google Tag Manager, do that again. 100% redundant. I won't do it with you now because this is recorded and you can go back, but it's the exact same thing to the T. You're going to create a trigger, which is this page. You're going to create a tag, which is the conversion action that you create inside of Google Ads. So come in here and create a new conversion action. Once you've created that new conversion action, you should see 2. So now there's contact us form, and then there's also purchase my course or purchase my whatever. Then we can come in and create our new campaign. And instead of leads, we're going to go for sales. And that conversion action, by the way, can now have a value. So if you wanted to say this is worth, you know, however much your course is worth, you can start populating that value and you're in pretty good shape to do that, as long as it's a static value for your course. We're going to click search again. We're not going to select any of these options again. You know what's so funny? That's the only difference. Let me make sure I'm not wrong. Everything else is exactly what we just discussed. All languages, I wouldn't segment audience. Sorry, y'all, I just want to make sure I'm not about to sell you short. Yeah, you would choose sales and then build the campaign out the exact way that we just built it out. Obviously more robust extensions and ad copy. You'd make sure that you have your conversion action chosen here, the right one. And then everything else is the same. So for some reason, I thought I was going to have to go through all this again, but I realize now that, you know, as long as you choose that different goal guidance, then you're in really good shape. Just repeat the steps that I just offered you. So we did it. That's it. I'm going to stop sharing here and just maybe see who has questions, comments, concerns, or confessions. I've got the Q&A portal open. I've also got another 20 minutes allocated. So happy to chat. Also happy to release you and give you your time back if you want. I noticed we went from 11 attendees to 6, which means I probably bored some people to sleep. But if there's anything that you want or need, and if you want me to promote you to a panelist so we can chat or we can hot seat, or if you want me to audit something you've got going on, happy to do that too. Let's make this super valuable. You know, this is free coaching. Take advantage of it. Don't be shy. And if I don't see anything pop up in Q&A or chat in the next like 60 seconds, then I'm going to assume that all y'all are Netflixing and I'm going to jump ship. Liz is saying happy to chat. Cool, Liz, I'm going to promote you then. Dana, you asked for a link on statistical analysis. Do you mean inside of the Google Ads campaigns, like how to audit and measure the campaigns? Hey, Liz, how are you?
Well, thanks. How are you?
Living the dream. Thanks for hopping in and being the brave one.
Of course, I don't mind. Like, not at all. Hang on, I just got to get be able to see. Oh, there you go. So my thing with, or I should say where I'm at, is I've just recently come onto Simplero because I realized that I can create a course there and it suits my target market, which is basically corporate employees. A huge market, but I'm starting with really with nothing much in terms of list. So I guess I'm trying to get a sense of when it's smart to go to Google Ads, bearing in mind budget's an issue, or budget is a consideration, I should say, not an issue. You know, what sort of expectations you can achieve, or what you can achieve as a startup.
Do you mind me asking a little bit more about your business? What's your core offer? So let's say I'm a corporate employee. What would you sell me?
Yeah, right at the minute, I would sell you a sort of 4-module course on building your emotional resilience. So self-development.
Okay. Self-development course for corporate employees. I didn't promote Liz properly. There we go. Liz, you're now a panelist and you can share your video if you want to, but you don't have to. Self-development course for corporate employees. Is there any specificity applied to that specific course? And what I mean by that is, like, is this for middle management, upper managers, new employees, tenured employees, more for men, more for women? Like, is there a way that we can niche down further?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we really want to niche down, I'd say we'd be talking women 27 to 45, management and below, management and below. Yeah.
That's great. So I think in that instance, I wouldn't go Google, I would go Facebook. And the reason for that is Google's great for intent-based audiences. Facebook or YouTube even, but it's unlikely that these people are searching for exactly what you have to offer. And even if they are, it's a hyper-competitive ecosystem at that point. Now you're competing against, like, you know, major coaching players. With Facebook, what you can do is you can go to Facebook and say, hey, I want, you know, women in this age range. And then you can start to isolate even specific corporations. So you can isolate by employer.
Good idea.
And then what you want to do, though, is you want to make the most compelling offer they've ever heard. Where Facebook goes wrong, Facebook's interrupted marketing. So if somebody says, hey, do you want to buy my thing? No, I don't want to buy your thing. I'm on Facebook. I'm here stalking ex-girlfriends and looking at pictures of my kids. Like, that's what people do on Facebook. So instead, like, where we've been really successful with Facebook is running challenges. Pedro Adeo is a client of ours, is the world authority on online challenges. But you know, any type of offer or workshop or giveaway or something that you tell these women, like, hey, you know, and you want to make it really finite, so easy to imbibe, but also hyper valuable. So it could be something like, and you'll actually know better than me, so I'm going to brainstorm here with you, Liz, but, you know, it could be, because there's wage gaps, right? So it'd be like, bridge the gender wage gap in 3 days. So here's a 3-day course on how we're going to show you how to properly, you know, identify, negotiate, and overcome the fact that you're not getting paid what your male counterparts are getting paid. And maybe that's a horrible idea. But the best thing to do, to be honest with you, is take the 4-module course that you have, take the very first module, find the most valuable thing about it, splinter it out, and then make that your giveaway on Facebook. And then once they get into it, over-deliver on value, and let them know, by the way, if you've enjoyed this, I have this 4-module course that I have to sell you. And you do it live the very first time, and then after that, you have it recorded, and you can actually start to just give that away on Facebook as a lead magnet, the live version, a recorded copy, and then that segues into your module. How does that land? Does that feel helpful?
Yeah, really good, actually. Thank you. I really appreciate the concept of splitting a piece out of the modules and putting that up as a giveaway. It's fantastic.
Awesome. Happy. Yeah.
And the rest of what you said is very good too. I mean, not just that, but that's the piece I've got that's so helpful. Also, thanks for steering me away from Google for now. Maybe it's for later.
Yeah, and Google, I think, is you know, the Google Display Network could work well for you. YouTube could work well for you. The problem is you're going to have to spend a lot to learn. Yeah. Google's, you know, it's an expensive lesson. And to be frank, I think it's because it's higher quality traffic. But in the short term, while you're still building your list, I think Facebook's a good place to be. YouTube might be the next step, and then Google search after that. And my last piece of advice before I feel like I'm belaboring this topic is, as much as you can niche down. If you can niche down by corporation, if you could say, hey, Twitter employees, like go do your research and figure out what is it that female Twitter employees encounter that sucks, you know? But the more granular, the more myopic you can get in scope, the better generally that offer resonates with people.
By employer is a fantastic concept, actually. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Liz. I really appreciate you jumping on live. Anybody else? Dana's got the one that results in founder conversion. Oh, I think you're talking about the statistician's model that I referenced. So that's my model, and I don't have documentation on that. Basically, where that comes from, Dana, is I took a bunch of courses, a lot of self-education on statistics, and they call the statistician's model as a base 100 model, meaning they need 100 data points before they make any decisions. So, you know, if you're going to analyze the flight patterns of birds, you'd have to analyze 100 birds before you say definitively, this is the pattern. And all I did was take that into Google Ads and say, okay, I need 100 clicks before I know for a fact. And it's not just clicks. 100 impressions tells me what my click-through rate could be. 100 clicks tells me, you know, how my on-site performance is. 100 leads tells me what my lead quality is. And then what you get to do is you get to say, all right, I don't have the money to actually generate 100 leads, so I'm going to do half of that. I'll do 50 with the understanding that, you know, I'm applying 2 percentage points where 1 percentage point should be applied. So it's a rule that you can break, but it's a rule that I like to back into specifically when I'm going for budgets. If I need 100 clicks, what do I have to spend in order to get these 100 clicks? And the reason I give you 500 clicks, not just 100, is because it's basically one decision a week, more or less, you know, plus one. And what I want to be able to do is optimize the campaigns actively. And if I find a week where I don't get to make a strong decision, then I feel like I'm not justifying my own fee, my own existence. So as a Google Ads manager, I like getting, you know, at least 100 clicks a week. And that kind of is padded a little bit for friendliness. Was that helpful, Dana? Any other questions from anybody else? Cool. I feel like we did a good job. Nita, I'm so sorry. You told me how to pronounce your name at the beginning of this, and now I've forgotten.
That's okay. It's Netta. How's it going?
Netta.
Super cool to listen in on.
Yeah, I'm glad. And I think we're done, right? So I'll just jump and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, you can go ahead and hit end, and I'll get that recording uploaded and send out to everyone. It should go out tomorrow morning.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate everybody that showed up. Thank you so much for being here. And I'll see y'all when I do the Facebook one.